cities were burned, the crops were burned, the mills were burned that would process grain, windmills, irrigation systems were torn up. Germany was turned into a wasteland. And this is one of the reasons why, this comes into modern history, why is it? Who were the great colonial empires? England, France, Spain, Portugal. Where was Germany?
What I'm saying is this, before Europe was thought of as Christendom under the moral authority of God, the law of God, administered by the church. No more. Now it's every man for himself. This is very important. You see, God's religion lost its hold on Europe. Put it succinctly. That is, on Europe overall, not individual countries. Yes?
Before we were talking about the personality of Luther, you're describing that just the medieval man and the type of men that they were. Now, at this time, have they progressed? Are they worse?
Well, I said they're different.
Well, they weren't worse, they were bad in the sense then. But do they regress that too?
Well, in some ways, yes, in some ways, no. They became more enlightened intellectually, but morally, no. Not really. We're not going to find any, we're going to find that the age of the moral change was really Calvinist and Protestant.
So Lutheranism really had no effect on the medieval man.
It's morals, only gradually. Now my approach to history is this, and I think we don't only think we look at what happened back then, but we must study holistically, and we must see the unbroken web, seamless web, the history is a seamless web, as one man has said, that what happened back then directly affects us today. And in this parenthetical study, I try to capture that. Parenthetical study of what? The law or laws that guide nations in their relations with one another. Okay, we got all the nations in the world. Upon what basis do they get together? Do they interact? Okay, before the 17th century, that is before the 1600s, the basis of the relationships among men was canon law, Christian law. That is, it was assumed that there is a God in heaven and all men are responsible to him. That's basically it. Got that? Before this 30 years war, the basis of relations among men was, in Western civilization, this is the Western Civ Wars, was God. Through the church primarily, but God. So that while men would speak different languages and want different things, they all believed a basic standard of morality. That, for instance, it was wrong to murder. For instance, the basic values that make... How can I explain this? You see, before any group of people can get together, they have to have values on which they all agree. That's the point. Take a family. A family, I'm talking about a local family, begins to disintegrate. And the members of that family, it can disintegrate for all kinds of reasons, but I guarantee you that a family begins to disintegrate when the members of that family no longer agree on basic values and basic truths, on how you arrive at truth. That is, by a basic value, I mean this, while there were all kinds of men and all kinds of languages and all kinds of desires, it was a basic understanding, regardless, I'm not talking about how people live, but how they basically understood that there were basic values such as truth, you keep your word, you speak the truth, you don't kill, just for the basic things like that. There's your God, and that is, the whole world, Western civilization, was under a fundamental moral code. You see, that all went with the 30 Years War. That was gone. Why? Well, look what happened when you try that method. So from the 30 Years War to up to about World War I, the universal divine moral code was replaced by what is called, what some might call, an international moral law, but it was not based on God, it was based on reason, sort of natural laws. Listen, it's as simple as this. How do you know what's right? What is the basis of behavior that allows peoples to work together? What undergirds the relationship? If it's not God,
let me put it this way.
Nation A makes a treaty with Nation B, a non-aggression treaty. We won't invade you. You don't invade us. We promise. You understand? So the king of Nation A says to Nation B, you do these certain things, and we promise that we'll not invade you. And if somebody invades you, we'll come to your rescue. And the king of Nation B says, okay, if you'll do those things, and these three things, we promise not to invade you and to come to your aid if somebody does invade you. That's called an alliance. Upon what then, listen to me, this is, I'm trying to simplify this, upon what reason does King A have for believing that King B will keep his word? And what reason does King B have to believe that King A will keep his word? Well, not invade. Yeah. See, before the 30 years war, it was that both believed in God. Understand? Both King A and King B were subject to God, at least in theory, so that there was a divine moral. They both, are you with me? King A and King B might disagree on a lot of things, but they did agree on a single divine moral code that gave security. So that all of the things, not that they always did this, but all of the things being equal, King A would have a reason to believe that King B would keep his word. Why? Because King B believed in the same God he believed in. So if you formed a treaty, you both believed in God, there was a reason, there was no guarantee, but there was a reasonable expectation that that the treaty would hold. It was at least there was a basis for drawing up a treaty. Now, after the 17th century, after the 30 Years' War, from then on, there is a universal law of reason. That is, while there may or may not be a God who says that you must speak the truth and keep your word and not invade and stuff like this, there is a universal law of reason. That is, that all men sort of know that what Hitler did was wrong. Understand? Even if there's not a God, there's sort of a natural law or law of reason that just sort of, that is, a universally acknowledged code of ethics, a universally recognized moral code. Now that's really, it sort of has a mystical base, but that's, and by the way, it is on that basis that the League of Nations was formed and the United Nations. The United Nations, one of the reasons the United Nations doesn't work in most areas is that it presupposes a universally recognized law of reason, a universally acknowledged moral code. Now listen to me. You with me? You ever heard of the Geneva Accords? Mm-hmm. What do the Geneva Accords say? All civilized nations have signed them. If you go to war, the Geneva Accords say, Geneva Convention said, you can't shoot prisoners of war. Yeah? Go to war, they're supposed to protect prisoners of war. That is, if you capture somebody, he's in uniform. He's not a criminal, he's a prisoner of war. All he has to give is a name, rank, and serial number. You can make him work, but you can't work him to death. You have to feed him, give him medical care, treat him with some respect. Why? He's not a criminal. He was serving his nation. He got caught. He's supposed to be protected. When the war's over, he's sent him home. You got that? You don't bomb hospitals. So a hospital will mark its, the hospital ship or an ambulance or a hospital. A building where they put a big cross on the top so when you fly over it, the enemy sees that and they don't bomb that. When the war is over, the medics can go out the battlefield and pick up the wounded and you don't shoot them. I mean, when the battle's over, understand that? That's an example. Why not? Why don't you bomb hospitals? The answer is because also part of this was you don't put munitions factories next to populated areas, civilian population. Why? Because they get bombed, the civilian population will be bombed. Hitler used to build his
ammunition factories next to orphanages, hospitals. You know, so the Allies wouldn't bomb them. But you're not supposed to do that. Why?
Why not?
Why not bomb a hospital? Well, it's not, you know, it's not. In other words, the answer is, we sort of all know that you don't do that kind of thing. Why? Because the universal law of reason says that if we start doing that, then civilization breaks down and we all lose. In other words, so to preserve civilization, even though you have a war, lest it, you might have a winner and a loser, but you don't want to destroy civilization. So we recognize this basic code. Okay, so the League of Nations, the United Nations, and the Geneva, of course, and things like the Geneva Convention, all presuppose this universal law, and that held pretty well up until World War I, roughly World War I. And for instance, the war was conducted sort of under a, well, you ever heard of the Gentleman's War? The Gentleman's War is the Civil War, the American Civil War, some said was the last Gentleman's War. Civil War recognized that, and other war, for instance, the British were good at that. What's a Gentleman's War?
It's where you don't cheat. You can fight, but you don't cheat.
For instance, do you realize that the Geneva Convention says you don't use dum-dums, soft-nosed bullets? Why? Yeah, because they unnecessarily maim. You shoot someone, you're not supposed to do that. The Gentleman's War is you don't mistreat your enemy's prisoners. Don't use weapons. You don't use weapons that unnecessarily maim. You don't attack the civilian population if you don't have to. You try to preserve civilians. You go out under the white flag and talk things over. You know, put the white flag and somebody shows a white flag, you honor it, things like that. Now, that broke down, that lasted until communism, you know, until World War I, when, in the onset of communism, when the universal law of reason went by the boards, and now that is gone.
What about
World War I? The World Court is close to that, they see. Nobody pays any attention to it. They can get beat and make decisions, and everybody does exactly what they want to do. With communism, the coming of Marxism, then you get a whole new definition. Communism denies a universal rule of reason, a natural law of right and wrong, a natural moral code. What is right? What is right is whatever furthers communism. What is wrong? Whatever hinders socialism. Right? That's the term. You got that? So one is a national socialism, one is an international socialism. That's the only difference, fundamentally. Well, that's what Nazi means, national socialism, national socialist party. Now listen to me. With communism, all bets are off. That is, there's no reasonable expectation for keeping your word. So the prisoners of war have no protection. With World War I, especially World War II, the Germans systematically bombed hospitals, worked prisoners of war to death in the factories. The Geneva Conventions were Hitler simply did not observe them. Referee's going to count, and I'm going to take 10 steps, and I promise not to turn and shoot. before, I think, 10 steps. Okay? Under the old way, the original plan, after the 17th century, what reason did they have not to take 6 steps and turn and shoot? Because of God. Forget you. Both believed in the same God. They gave their word. That is, the other guy is under, he believes the same, the other guy believes in God. He has the same reason I have for keeping my word. Okay? Under the 17th century, about World War I, or in this century, what reason did they have for believing the other guy was going to take 10 steps before he turned and shot? You just don't do that kind of thing. Civilized men don't do that. If we start doing that, then duels. So if we're going to fight a duel, if we're going to settle this thing in an orderly way, we just don't do that kind of thing. What reason is there now for man A believing that man B is going to take 10 steps before he turns and shoots?
There is none.
Well, you know what? And by the way, this, you see, it's all gone. There's no treaty. Well, the reason treaties don't work, well, rather, the United Nations doesn't work. Treaties don't work because nobody has a reason to keep their word. And the communists say that it's in their documents, it's in their theory, it's in their political theory. They keep their word only when it's in their best interest to do it. Does it frustrate you, the communists, that they won't keep any? There was, why is Reagan so slow to enter into an easy treaty with Russia? Because Russia has systematically lied about everything. They have never done anything that they've agreed to do if it was not in their interest to do it. And they've said they don't have any intention of doing what they said they do if it's not in their best interest. And so here, and one of the reasons why the free world is losing is that the free world is still acting as if the rule of reason is still in effect. But the other side has openly disavowed it a long time ago. This is where America is, and the Western allies are, in say, in arms negotiations. Let me ask you this: would you, let's say, you had to fight a duel? Would you fight a duel with a man who believed the same God you did? And so he said, "In the name of God, I swear that I'll take 10 steps before I turn and shoot." You take 10 steps. Would you fight that?
Yeah.
Would you fight a duel with a man who said, "Look, I don't know if it was a God or not, but common sense says that you know, you've got to keep your word. It's just the reasonable thing to do. Otherwise, we're both civilized men, yeah, we're both civilized men. You know, we all sense that it's right to take the full 10 steps, yeah, would you find that doable? You wouldn't be as quick to as the first case, but you'd say, yeah, I've got a reason to believe. But you guys, as much a gentleman as I am, you're civilized. He'll take 10 steps before he shoots. Would you fight a duel with a man who said this? Now, okay, we're going to fight a duel. The rule is take 10 steps before you turn and shoot, right? But the guy says to you, now, I promise that I'll take 10 steps before I turn and shoot you. But one thing you must know, that my worldview, the philosophy under which I operate, my way of doing things, requires of me, written it, my worldview requires of me that I never keep my word unless it's in my best interest to do so. Would you fight a duel with that man? What would you call a man who would fight a duel with that man? An idiot. Is he going to take 10 steps before he turns and shoots? No. But you see, but the thing that makes you an idiot is he told you. Now listen to me, I've got to make a point. You got it? The thing that makes you the stupid fool is he didn't lie to you. He told you up front that his worldview requires that he never keeps his word unless it's in his best interest to do so. In fact, the Soviet system has said to the West, we are on the tide of history,
we as Christians will bury you, it's inevitable. Our worldview, our political philosophy, requires that we never keep our word unless it is in our best interest. And in this case, our best interest is the ultimate domination of international socialism. What kind of man would enter into a treaty with somebody like that? That's why you need to be very careful. You see, that's why conservatives and Reagan have said he's right, you can only negotiate from strength. Would I fight a duel with a man who says, what I just said, you must know ahead of time, I don't need my word, it's in my best interest to do so. Yes, you might. How? Well, I'll fight you. But I got a friend over there with a double-barrel shotgun. And if you turn around before number 10, he's going to blow your head off. You have that? There's my friend. He's my, you know, my second in this duel, you know, second in, he's my man. My second is a double-barrel shotgun loaded with buckshot. And he's got a train right on your head. And if you turn around on the count of four, or on the count of six, or even on the count of nine, he's going to blast you off the face of this earth. Under those conditions, I might agree to fight the duel. That's exactly what the nuclear umbrella is. You have to negotiate from a position of strength. Will the man keep his word? The other fellow? Well, he might, but only if he has a good reason to. If it's in his best interest to keep his word. And if he decides it's in his best interest not to get his head blown off, you know, by my friend, then he'll keep his word.
You lose that nowadays when you take somebody, maybe not Russia or America, but you take somebody like Gaddafi, which is not trying to get all nuts. That's nuts. He says, well, it may be in our best interest to die.
Yes.
In order to...
I think
you ought
to help him.
Thank you. Praise the Lord.
Have you?
Conditions come down
to that.
I mean,
he could die in order to have the final thing.
But does this help you understand? I've oversimplified it, but this is the principle. If you have one man operating under the rule of either of a divine moral code or a natural code of reason, either because there's a God that says you must keep your word, or act decently, or he acts simply as a reasonable man, a sort of a natural morality, like Aristotle talked about, he might keep his word. But you see, if he's fighting somebody who says, my worldview won't let me keep my word, it might hurt me, then who's going to always win?
That's why we're doing it. That's why the West is doing it.
The same thing when they converged to the Indians.
Well, not really. That was different.
Well,
that was
maybe a different reason, but the same thing we made trees in
Ireland.
Because they weren't out of the way.
Yeah. But do you get the point? So now we have no law. That's why we have to, in my opinion, believe nothing the Russians say. And it's interesting, they will negotiate only when they won't even negotiate unless they're forced to. Do you notice what happened? Carter, the liberals say, well, if we reduced our nuclear arsenal, the Russians would be reasonable to reduce theirs. Under the Carter years, our nuclear arsenal was allowed to be in relation to the Russians to go way down. What did Russia do? They built theirs up. They walked away from the bargaining table and refused to come back. What brought them back?
Reagan.
The mutual Reagan, what's called Star Wars, all of a sudden they got interested in negotiating. Why? Because if that technology is developed, the offensive advantage disappears. And so it's now in their best interest, understand? The guy loaded, what happened is, in this analogy, the guy loaded his shotgun. He's loading his shotgun, they say, wait a minute now. All of a sudden, they have a reason to even negotiate. Why? Because now it's in their best interest to do so,
has nothing to do with honor or truth or anything like that.
It's kind of funny. They're wanting us to stop nuclear testing for 3 months. Wonder why.
Yeah. It ain't a good slowdown. This one, I've studied at a liberal university and talked with them endlessly. And liberals are the most naive people in the world. They believe, anybody would believe what the Russians say. The New York Times editorial staff, when I meet them, I expect to be people who dribble oatmeal down their shirt. all you gotta do is just sneak a peek into history books and see. In other words, if they can name one of says, I cannot keep my word unless it's in my best interest to do so, then the only way you can operate is to keep a shotgun loaded. You have no chance whatever. Is this making sense to you? So we went from divine moral code to a natural moral code to no moral code. And America's very much, by the way, America's not guiltless in this. What Americans have done, and are not to be credited for it, is that they have joined the moral code of the other side. For instance, I talk to a lot of guys who fought in Vietnam. They had a very easy way of interrogating people and bring three prisoners out. They had a very simple way of getting one man to talk and throw the other two out of the helicopter. Will you answer my question? No. You know? Will you answer my question?
Then again, that brings a point of question to me in my mind about whether you have grounds as a Christian to fight. I mean, physical murder.
Well, that's a whole other question. We talked about that last quarter, pacifism, defensive wars. But we're talking about the method used. It's one thing to say, should we fight to defend this, our country, to defend freedom? The question is, what methods do we use? And I agree. Now, again, but it's very complicated because what happens is, where the West finds itself, are you all interested in this? Fight dirty, or do you lose? And it's a dilemma. You see, how dirty can you fight and still preserve your integrity? And it's a real problem. Things begin to break down. And so, for instance, has America always kept its word with Russia? No, we quit doing that. Why? Because we can't. In every case. Or at least 100%. I don't think America, the SALT Treaty was always not ratified by the Senate. Has America kept the terms of the SALT Treaty? Not really. Why? We can't. If we do, it's like unloading the shotgun. You put it in impossible, but then the question is, if we become what they are, what's the use of it? It's a real problem.
The only way Russia could change the way they look at things. Like I said, they're pointing at us, we're pointing at them. We got
That's why the UN Charter still stands now. What I'm saying is the reason that we're losing the Cold War is because we're off the West and has been operating under the rule of reason, the law of reason, and the East operates under no law but the advance of international socialism. It's like a two-man fight to do it.
So it doesn't
one,
work.
One always has to lose part of it.
It doesn't work, but is it right? The law.
One man does, one man doesn't. It's like two men fighting a duel by two separate rules. If you cannot fight a duel, which depends upon the other person keeping his word, yeah, unless both have the same moral code, whether it's divine or just natural.
Can we go back to what you just talked about a minute ago about fighting like they knew they were fighting, how far will you go, changing over to like they fight?
Yeah.
What all can that apply to? Can that apply to like ball games and stuff like that? I mean, we're talking about like last night, we started out the first half, we played ball like you're supposed to play ball. But they were one of these teams that they knocked you out, you know. And so the second half, and we were down. So in order to win the game, we had to come out, play ball like they played ball.
I refuse to answer that on the grounds that my answer might tend to incriminate me.
Well, I'm just saying, but,
rules of a game.
Yeah, right. What it does is it raises an ethical problem. I know. What do you do? If the other team refuses to play fair, what you're asking for? You got a choice. Either you play the way they do, or you don't play.
But how far can you go on that? I mean, it wasn't nothing immoral. I mean,
yeah.
It's breaking the rules. But can you break the rules?
Well, the problem is,
there are no rules.
The answer is, yes, you can, but if it happens enough, pretty soon you don't have rules.
Right.
Therefore, it's wrong. I don't say it's all important, but it's wrong. Let me. I don't want to make this an ethics class, but I do have to feel responsible to teach you the historic, the connectedness of history. That's the word. Understand the word? Let me explain to you something which is very right contemporary. It's a quandary. What do you do about terrorism? On the other hand, you've got a terrorist who will walk into an airport and shoot 11-year-old kids. Why? Because we're trying to make a point. How do you respond to that? Someone, Reagan, the answer becomes easy. Say, we got the firepower. Let's just turn, what's the capital of Libya, Tripoli? Let's turn Tripoli into a parking lot. Do that, that would sure get their attention. But then, what about all the innocent people, children? You see, so America refuses, at least for the time being, to respond in kind. They kill children. We think it's right to kill the terrorists. To go after them, whatever we have to do to mobilize them, which I think is under international law, is our right. It is not immoral, understand? Under international law, at least in theory, in the spirit of international law, strike team, either an airplane or an undercover team, and go either kidnap them or kill them. For instance, when America forced down the plane that had the terrorist, the Egyptian plane, perfectly legal, because they've got the target. And it would be in the spirit of international law if those terrorists, say, were in a training camp and there was a whole unit of terrorists, they could wipe out the whole unit.
Of course, what is it for the plane over there?
Pardon?
The Egyptian plane to shoot it down.
No, it was wrong to shoot the Egyptian plane. But they could have at last resort, but because there was not, there was just that team, there was not a passion for
it. There were Egyptian pilots that had.
Yes, but they took that responsibility on themselves. They would have been right to shoot down that plane. See, it was not a passion. Not a general passion for flight. And the pilots on there took their chances, at least the country they represent. There must have been a soldier. Understand? So they took their chances. So they would have been right to shoot down that plane, and they would have shot it down. Otherwise, how can you force it down? How can you force a plane down if you're not gonna, you have no intention of shooting it down, you know? Now, but if it's right to say go in and blow up a terrorist camp, so then how you can do it. But is it right to say attack a civilian? Of course, what these PLO, these terrorists do, they always stay among in civilian population, so you can't do that. Why? See, there's our disadvantage. See, they will be careful to stay, you know, to mingle with the population, put their headquarters in populated areas. So we can't do that. Why? Because they know that they're recognizing a law that we're not. They will kill children as a part of their method. They do it on purpose. That is, what they will kill indiscriminately. And they know that we will not. See, that's where America is now. That's like
so it's illegal. We have no right to go in and look at the situation.
Well, then you see what you're doing is you're. Go ahead.
On it. So, just like what he's saying, I have a similar question, but using biblical precedence, although it is from the Old Testament, God told Saul to go in and wipe out everybody.
Well, but that's different. That was.
But what I'm looking at is
the nation, that America's not under the same mandate that Israel was under.
That, well, true. But what I was thinking is you have the people there in the city, the so-called quote unquote innocents. The only innocents I believe is there are the children, because if they were really worried about it, they would do something themselves to get rid of the terrorists.
No, well, that's theoretically, but that doesn't really work that way. People can't. When would it become right to go in and bomb the city? The answer is only if a war were declared. And then you had to limit your target all that you could. But you see, because once a country declares war, then they themselves are putting their own population at risk. Understand?
Libya's never declared war for that reason.
No.
Can we declare war on them?
So, but under the rule of international reason, you can't go in and bomb the city until war is declared. Then, and even then, you have to do it. You have to do what you can to preserve the civilian population, even in those conditions. So, here we are. What do you do without terrorists, you see? Well, the problem is created by the fact that the terrorists recognize no law except their cause, and we, the West, labor under the rule of reason and natural morality. Now, again, the problem is, and many point out this. Some say, go in and bomb them anyway, that'll stop them. Whether it will or not, others say, look, what will we become if we start doing what they do? Now that gets to the general question.
But if you can do what they do up to a point and stop this, if it will stop,
yeah,
then you can stop what you're doing and back up.
But anyway, you see. Yeah. Do you all see the problem? And that's the quandary right now. Do we become terrorists, in effect? Do we become what they are? And somebody say, well, we may have to. But at least we see the nature of the problem. For instance, I know the hostages, you know, in Iran. See, the Ayatollah is behind a bunch of that. I'm perfectly convinced that we can get those hostages back quite easily. We could say to the Ayatollah, look, we have until 3 o'clock Friday afternoon to have those people at the Beirut airport in American hands. Otherwise,